are a proud member of the 143 Podcast Network.
How's it going, everybody? This is Joey Galvez, and you are listening to the House of Indie Podcast.
And I have someone on the line who's you've been in the industry for quite a bit. We have Todd Black on the line. How's it going, man?
Hey, everybody. My name's Todd. Nice to be here. Thanks for letting me into the House of Indie.
Yeah, you're welcome, man. So we connected over the internet, the interwebs, that wonderful thing that we were talking about just a second ago, how sometimes it doesn't really act like a friend. But no. This time it was a good friend to us because we connected over the internet and we got to talking, and I said, come on the show, man. So now you're here, and we're here to talk about your work in the industry. So number one, I need to know, because I've been talking to some friends and they were asking me who I was talking to this week. And when I mentioned your name, they were like, oh, man, he's been doing this for a while now. So how long have you actually been doing this wonderful medium, work in this medium that we love?
Technically about 6 or 7 years. I started loosely around 2014, and I've been making comics and a few novels ever since. So
awesome.
It's been quite a ride.
Awesome. And I know I've seen some of your work. Which one was your very first work that you ever put out? Like,
that was my superhero series, Guardians.
Okay. But before that, have you ever done anything else? Have you like put together like some zines or stuff that you used to peddle like in cons and stuff like that? Because we know about Guardians, we know about 10,000 Miles, we know about Home.
What really got me started, what got me popular on the internet in a way, was I wrote a fan fiction for the Avatar cartoon series.
Okay.
I wrote an OC story about the Avatar to come after Korra. And I wrote it just as to get it out of my head, because that's what always happens with my stories. You just get stuck there until I write them down. And then some people were like, no, you need to keep writing this, because it was right after season one of Korra. And of course, we had 434 days until season two showed up. Not that I was counting. But I was like, let's just keep writing this. And eventually I even had like an animated short about the actual title intro for the series. And that has like over 170,000 views on Twitter, my most popular video ever.
Nice.
And so that just got me the confidence to write stuff. And that led to screenplays, which led to comics.
That's pretty amazing. I got to find that video, because when I was a big fan of the Avatar series, and then the movie came out, and I was like, oh, come on, guys. I mean, me, I really love some cheesy stuff. It was good. Because the guy who loves the cheese loved it, but
it's
not a movie that I'd probably watch over and over again. That's kind of how I judge things. Like, if I watch it over and over again and I'm like cool with it, or if it bothers me, then I'm like, it's not good. So, and then when Legend of Korra came, I was like, oh, this is awesome. This is exactly what I needed. I need this. So now I need that book to happen, man. That needs to happen.
Well, the problem, though, is that when I wrote it on IGN because they had this blog service. And it was like, free and easy to reach people. And then out of the blue one day, they shut down the whole blog and I didn't get to save the whole story. So like the final chapters are lost to the internet.
They stole it. That's what they did.
Pretty much. But yeah.
They stole it. They have it somewhere so they can sit on it and use it later.
I wrote them. I'm like, can you bring it back up for like a day so I can, save my stuff? And like, I never heard back.
That's stupid. Funny. That's crazy. All right. So tell us a little bit about Guardians. You mentioned Guardians earlier.
Yeah, that was my first comic book series. It was about two superheroes created by a deity to protect a city in need. They were given great power, perfect control of their power, zero people skills. And what happens is they live on the top of this watchtower in the middle of the city, and they go, and they wait to be needed. Then they'll go down, save the day, and come right back, because it's all they know how to do. And as time goes on, they start to ask themselves, is there more to our lives than just this purpose? Mm-hmm. One says yes, one says no, supervillains start showing up, and the fun begins.
Sweet. That sounds like a really cool story.
Yep.
That's a crazy dynamic. I had a buddy who was talking about Guardians, and he really absolutely loved the series. And I actually started looking it up on Comixology when he told me about it. And I'm like, I am totally going to purchase some of these books so that I can read it.
I gotta focus and get the rest on there. I stopped after a while because I wasn't like making a lot on Comixology.
Right.
Which is not a problem. I'm a small fish in a big pond, which is fine. But go ahead and check them out. And if you like them, I'll just send you the rest for free. I don't mind.
It's all good, man. I'm one of those guys like, hey, I'll definitely, if it's worth it and it's a great story, I'll definitely pay for it. That's not a big thing to me at all.
Well, I also have it on Amazon if you want physical copies. So oh, just saying.
Okay. I think I'm going to look that up.
I'll send you a link. I have an author page.
Great. That's awesome. I'll take a look. And then what we'll do is we'll even throw that on the show in the show notes so that everybody can see that as well.
Sounds great. So
give us a quick log line of Guardians so that we've been talking about it. Everybody needs to know about it now.
Well, the log line is they asked for angels, they prayed for saviors, and what they got were Guardians. So you get what you need, not exactly what you asked for. And It creates a fun story. It's actually the longest story I've written so far in terms of comics. It's 20 issues long at present. Then we took a hiatus to do my other comic series. Mm-hmm. So when it comes back, I'll be picking up right where I left off. So my current series is a Tokyo Blade Detectives, mm-hmm. which I'm going to be launching a Kickstarter for on Saturday. So,
sweet. Yeah, this one, I was looking through this one, and the artwork is actually pretty good. I'm not the type, I'll watch anime. In film and TV like that. But I've never really kind of went over to like anime manga type style comic books. So when I was looking through this one, I was like, this is not bad. This is not like, cause you there's some mangas you're just like, I can't follow this. I can't do this. This wasn't bad at all. And I liked it. I liked it quite a bit. And I actually thought I was like, this artwork is really good. The storyline's awesome. It was really good, and it surprised myself because I'm not really into this type of stuff usually, but I was like, okay, I think I could probably get into this. So
yeah,
really, really cool. So tell us a little bit about Tokyo Blade Detectives.
So Tokyo Blade Detectives is about Japan 200 years from now, give or take. They have been ravaged by war, both from external and internal forces. The country's basically been burned to the ground and rebuilt with technology. And so to try and get back to what they had as, you know, an ancient superpower, if you will, they kind of revert to their more feudal ways, as in feudal Japan.
Yeah.
And but they're also still infused with technology. And so to keep the peace, if you will, they do a few things. And the biggest one is a law that no one can break. No guns allowed.
Yeah.
So now that creates a power vacuum. So what they did was they made laser swords. Yes, laser swords. Totally not the other thing you're thinking of. It's laser swords. But the problem with that is that it causes a reverse power vacuum in that there are factions that rise up to challenge the government, each with their own ideals of what Japan should be. Mm-hmm. And so, especially in the capital of Tokyo, everything's just in chaos. There's battles and skirmishes happening like every single day, and the people are caught in the crossfire. And one of those people is a 16-year-old girl named Miko, who is trying to make it through the days as a detective, and she gets a case that's going to change everything. So,
yeah, and this is a wonderful story. And like I said, I'm not usually into these kinds of comic books, but the story was such a good story. I said, no guns, awesome looking swords, I'm in. So and freaking laser swords, man, come on.
Laser swords.
That's yeah, right.
Well, that was the hardest thing at first, because I'll tell you the origin a little later, but the question was, is that if I wanted to do, you know, futuristic Japan, the mm-hmm. easiest answer is to do like tricked out guns, you know, like Cowboy Bebop and Outlaw Star and all of them. Mm-hmm. You know, how big and crazy can you make the guns? And like, well, everyone's done that, so why don't I just get rid of them? So and suddenly we have a new dynamic. So
yeah, something so simple becomes something pretty complex, actually, and it's really, really cool. I thought it was really interesting when I read the log line and all that kind of stuff. So super cool, super awesome. How far have you gotten? How many arcs have you done to this one so far? What are you going to kickstart?
The two that you read are the first two issues that we have made.
Okay.
Issue three is the one that's about to go on Kickstarter.
Awesome.
And once we do issue four, we'll be done with the first arc.
Okay.
So we're still in the beginning phases, but we're slowly growing it, and I'm happy with where it's going so far. But I have so many arcs planned. Like,
awesome.
I'm thinking way down the line.
Yeah,
it gets crazy. It gets anime crazy.
Well, you have to, man. I mean, you gotta map the whole thing out. So I need to know, everybody talks about Kickstarting. How successful was your Kickstarter? And you put the other two on Kickstarter, right?
Yes.
How successful were they?
Well, I'm not going to lie. This one, this series in particular, was one I was very nervous about for the reasons you just said. Because while I made it to be an anime comic, would people read an anime comic? Because, you know, anime's got the loyal fan base. We all know that. Yeah. But this isn't, you know, My Hero, and this isn't Dragon Ball or Bebop or Sailor Moon even, or all of them. Old so school, I was like, would I be able to appeal to those fans? So I put a modest goal out there and it crushed it. And I was very happy. And then the second issue, I was like, oh, I'm probably going to have a drop off. And I had a little bit of one, but we still, you know, crushed the goal. And I'm fully expecting to do the same with three, if for no other reason than I'm promoting really hard just to make sure we get through this one.
Yeah.
So it's been successful. It's stressful every time, even when I've made the goal in record time. Yeah. But, you know, Kickstarter by nature is stressed from start to finish.
Right.
And I'll give you a great example. The second one, I started it on February 7th. No, 14th. Sorry, 14th, because I had a little bit of a delay. And I was like, oh, this will be fine. What could possibly happen between February 14th and March 14th, 2020? And that was right when COVID started happening.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So I got lucky in that only like one person had to back out. And it was actually one of my bigger backers. So I it was a little bit of a hit, but if I had gone on a few more weeks, I'm sure those pledges would have dropped because you know, the lockdown and everything. So I got lucky.
Well, yeah, we've had a handful of friends who were on the show and off the show that have done Kickstarters, and one even launched a Kickstarter in the middle of it. Well, closer towards the, I don't know, was there even an end? But
we're still going.
Right, I was gonna say in the end, but no, I don't. I think we're living in the end, but there's no end to this in sight, at least. But and it's hard to kickstart something or begin a business or something like that in a pandemic type situation. Yeah. So it's absolutely crazy. And man, I mean, you can't gauge whether you would be successful or unsuccessful in this kind of time, because you just don't, you like, people who would back it are hurting. And it's just a difficult time and situation to be in right now.
And that's why for number three, I've done the lowest goal I have ever done. It's going to be like $750.
Okay.
And,
wow.
And I'm literally telling, I even wrote on the Kickstarter, if you can only pledge $5, if you can only pledge $10, it's fine. I totally get it. This is a pandemic. You know, people are hurting. And I've had people say, oh yeah, I'm going to be fine. And that's great. But I know there are people who won't be. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
For those listening, and it's like, oh, I might only have like, you know, $3 to spend. I've got rewards for that, including getting the comic digitally for $3.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I'll take 150 people pledging $5. I don't care.
So. Wow. So how do you feel about that? Because that's I think that's probably the lowest that I've ever heard anybody doing a Kickstarter for, $750. That's absolutely crazy.
Well, I'm trying to be fair, and ironically enough, I'm one of the few people I think that who are doing okay in the pandemic. Mm-hmm. My job was already work from home, so I wasn't drastically affected.
Okay.
So I was able to put a little more money in and get like more pages done to take the burden off the backers, and this is to, you know, help finish up the comic and then do shipping and everything. Mm-hmm. So it's not that much of a strain.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to help people out, because I know some people who are, you know, eager for this to come out, but others are like, well, I can't do 50 like I did last time. And I'm like, that's fine. Can you do 5? I'll take 5. I don't mind. So,
And you have to consider, it's absolutely, the world is flipped upside down right now. And I feel like I want to stop saying that in all these shows, because that's usually what it goes to, but it's our life. You can't not talk about it. It's our life right now. And it's crazy.
Well, the thing is that if the pandemic didn't happen like it did, I probably would have already been either almost done with this Kickstarter, or I would have already had it done already. Because the plan was to launch it either June 1st or July 1st.
Okay.
Because I was doing like a quick rotation, and my artist, Lan Vuvan, was just killing it on the art. We had gotten all the shipping done and blah, blah, blah. And so, like, that was when I was supposed to start. But I was like, there's no way I'm going to do this during, you know, the biggest part of the lockdown. And I'm only doing it now because I feel like, you know, the burdens have lessened in certain states and areas, and, you know, people have had time to at least recover a little.
Yeah. And at least a little bit. So. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man, I can't stress enough how crazy this place is right now, and I don't know how I would be in your shoes right now to because, you know, Kickstarters are already super stressful to begin with, out of a pandemic, not in a pandemic at all, and you're launching something in a pandemic. Anybody who is like building something that would have been super successful on a normal day, that may not be as successful now, and you just got to, it's, and I understand why you do the 750 goal to consider, hey, people are hurting. Not a lot of people are going to want to give me money for something that they don't see as necessary. I mean,
yeah,
be realistic here, right?
Yeah, it's very realistic.
So, it's crazy, man. And it's super stressful already, 'cause you're just like, oh, this is my thing. This is my, it's my life on the line here, kind of a thing.
I don't have life on the line, but it's what's been keeping me going during the pandemic in certain ways, because, you know, if I wasn't making a comic, I'd be like, what am I doing right now? So
yeah.
Tokyo has been keeping me going in certain ways. And I know that people are, you know, hungry for new content.
Oh, yeah.
So I know that there will definitely be some people to pledge just so they can say, I get a new comic out of this. And
yeah, no, you know, right now, like, I had to do the same thing. I had to stop. I had to cut my pull list in the shops because of what had happened. And I get my stuff either digitally now, or I order straight from the artist or creator, and even some press companies I order from. But where I was spending $50 a week or every 2 weeks, I'm not spending anything like that anymore. I'm so behind on the pulls that I did have. And I feel like a lot of people are kind of backing down on some of these kinds of things. But you're right. We are starving for content. We are starving for something new because we haven't had it for such a long time.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely crazy that this is happening right now. But
we'll make it through.
Right. Well, we're resilient, man. And the comic book industry is the same thing. Exactly.
Yeah. We're like X-Men. We adapt to survive.
Exactly. Breaking news. Well, not really, but we are going to interrupt the regularly broadcast episode with Todd Black to bring you a very special small segment. These are going to be spread out between a few different episodes coming in the near future. We're going to hear from a living legend, Brian Augustin, and I'm going to call this segment Pro Tips.
Hey, it's Brian Augustin, writer, editor, living legend, and here's a pro tip, especially for wannabe writers, for those who want to tell stories, you know, do what I do and steal my job. Here's the deal. Everyone knows, I hope, that when it comes to story, basically what you want to do is consider it as a three-act, a play, a film. Things on television, this is a basic story structure, the beginning, the middle, the end. What you want to do is consider the act one as the introduction of the conflict, introduction of the characters. In act two, everything escalates, perhaps comes to a near catastrophe. And then in act three, you resolve, come to a happy ending or a sad ending or a disaster. But the fact is, consider always the stories you're telling as a three-act play. Now, they use this in film. They use this on television. For comic writing, especially if you're writing a basic monthly 20-page, 22-page story, I've always used the model of, frankly, a sitcom. Whether it's a comedy or not that I'm trying to achieve, the sitcom provides a really good use of the three-act structure in short form. So you look at an episode of Seinfeld or The Office or any of that kind of stuff, they follow the same deal. Introduce the situation, the conflict, the characters, escalate, resolve. But it's done very much in short form because they have a grand total of, I don't know, 22 minutes to tell their story that fits in a half an hour time slot. But also because of those constraints, I believe that the very best sitcoms use this structure very tightly, and it's a good place to learn by studying before, you know, doing. Anyway, this may all be very obvious stuff, but it's my attempt to give you a pro tip on writing. I think next time I'll talk about how to be a comic book artist, how to break in. But for now, here's a perhaps useless tip. Three acts, sitcoms, write a story. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Thank you again, Brian Augustin, for that really cool pro tip. Now let's take a small break. And when we come back, we'll talk to Todd Black. Let's jump right back into our broadcast with Todd Black. All right, man. So talk to me about some of this stuff. I assume you are a lifelong fan of comic books, right?
Lifelong's a little bit of a stretch because I grew up watching like superhero cartoons.
Okay.
Like, you know, Batman, TAS, Superman, Justice League, X-Men, all of them. But comics wise, I didn't get into it until I was 18 because I didn't know if I had a comic book shop near me.
Okay.
So I there was a Marvel event called Dark Reign about to come out. And I was like, that shit kind of sounds cool. I should look up to see if I have a comic book shop. And sure enough, there's like one 10 minutes away from me. I'm like, oh, all this time. So that's when I got started getting into it. And I haven't stopped since. So I'm about 12 years now into comics. So okay. I've seen a lot of the good stuff in the recent decade or so.
Wow, that's cool, man. Yeah. What was your first comic book that you ever purchased?
I believe actually it was Dark Reign number one, but okay. I also got a Thunderbolts number 128, which is right at the end of the Secret Invasion arc.
Okay.
And heading into the Dark Reign arc. And then I got a Batman comic that was right before Battle for the Cowl, which is one of my favorite arcs ever. And let's see. Then I just started like picking up things based on whether I felt like I could get into it. Cause that was my biggest problem, was that I came into it late. So in like the Battle for the Cowl thing, that's easy to get into. Batman's dead from Final Crisis. Everyone knew that. Let's move on. But like, I couldn't get into Justice League cause I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
Superman and all of them, Spider-Man and all that. And then, when the new 52 happened, I'm like, oh, finally a whole bunch of number ones. So I picked up like all of the number ones that I felt I would enjoy. And I did the same thing with Marvel when they did their infinite number of reboots and resets and all that. Yeah. How does Squirrel Girl get two number ones in a year? These are the questions that will keep us up at night.
I'm not even going to touch that one, man. Cause I got some. Yeah. I'm kind of the same way. When I was a kid, we didn't have a comic shop anywhere near us, but I lived in a small town in California, like inland. We were like in the valley, in the smack dab in the middle of the state. And there was no shop around us, but luckily there was an ice cream shop who had a vast variety of magazines, and they had a small little comic book section. So what I did was I would go in there and I'd go rifle through the comic books. They had the spinner racks. They had a small little arcade in the back. So it was kind of like the go-to spot in town because there was nothing like that in town. So I went and picked up my first comic book there. And my first comic book, and it was a few years after it had come out. I don't know how it was still on the rack, probably because nobody knew anything about it because it wasn't a comic shop. It was X-Men of Volume 2, Number 1, the Jim Lee covers and all that stuff. I picked that one up. That was my first comic book that I had ever picked up. And it was in the 90s. I was a little bit younger, and I was like in my teenage years. Stopped for a long time, and then I got right back into it in my adulthood. And so I'm kind of like right there where you and I got back into it around the same time, like around New 52 time, like era there. So I'm kind of the same way. There was a big gap. And then I picked it back up in my adulthood. So I felt the same way, man. I was like, I don't know what the heck is going on. And the new 52 came up and the boom. And then I stopped for a long time again. So there's always those gaps in my life where I was like, I didn't read a lot. So I didn't really know what was going on. And it happens. I mean, it happens.
Yeah, it's totally fine. I mean, you got to do like, I've stopped comics because I was just like, I'm tired of these storylines and everything. I'm almost there with one comic right now that's actually made by a legendary creator. And I'm just like, you're supposed to be a legend and you write this crap. So.
Yeah, I haven't read Batman in quite a bit. So I'm the same way. I'm just like,
a lot.
I think the last time that I read a Batman book was when Tom King was doing it. And I was like, I'm done. I'm done. I'm like,
I'm out. And then now we got Tynan writing, and I'm like, ooh, I kind of want to read that because I've liked a lot of his stuff. I like everybody's in love with freaking Something Is Killing the Children right now, right?
Yeah.
What's your favorite indie comic that you're reading right now?
Indie comic?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've got so many friends making indie comics.
Okay.
I've got a friend named Matt Knowles. He's got one up for one of his books I actually kind of enjoyed, but now I'm not going to pick because I got so many indie friends. I mean, I like the crew from Source Point Press. They've got a lot of good stuff. And like my editor, actually, Casey Pierce, she works for Source Point Press. She does Nora and Cirrus and all of them. And Bob Saley does Salvagers. He's incredible. So there's a lot of good indie comics out there if you know where to look, including my stuff, obviously.
So yeah, I've had I'm gonna actually have Casey on in the near future here. So and I read her book Nora. That one was one of my favorites right now too. Source Point Press is killing it. Scout is killing it right now.
Oh yeah. So and I'm just happy to add to it with Tokyo Blade Detective.
Yeah. So. This one is really good looking, and man, I gotta tell you, it's a really great story. I'm excited for it. I can't wait. I can't wait to crack open the third one, man.
Yeah. Well, I'll look forward to your pledge on my Kickstarter.
Yeah, man. I'm always down. If I could pledge some money, I'm always down to do that. If I can spare the cost, and it sounds like, dude, you have some really great tiers. $3 for a digital.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah, and then for anyone listening and if you're interested in, you know, catching up on the series, I have a $5 reward where you'll get all three issues for $5. So, like, look digitally.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah, and then if you want a physical copy, we have a $10 tier where you can get, you know, number 3, or a $20 tier where you can get 1 through 3 physically. And then wow. I also have rewards where you can get every single comic I have ever made.
Whoa.
So, either okay. Digitally or physically. So,
wow.
You can also get drawn to the comic if anybody's interested.
That's awesome. Those are always fun when you do those kinds of things. You're like, I'm going to pledge for that. Get me into the comic book. And you always get to see yourself kind of drawn as in your case, in this one, you get an anime character with a really freaking cool sword.
Yeah, it's my most popular reward. I've done it since Home,
uh-huh.
Which launched on Kickstarter. And I've kept it ever since because people just want to be a comic book. Who do?
Yeah, so. It's super cool, man. I've never done anything like that where I've put myself into a comic book, but I've had friends who've done it, and it's really cool.
Yeah.
I've also had friends get their names in the comic books and stuff like that. So,
I have that, too. Yeah. I have a thank you page where you put everyone in a $15 tier or higher to thank them for supporting us.
That's always really cool to see yourself in there and stuff like that, especially, you know, when you're helping out somebody who is creating some freaking cool content. So what is your all-time favorite comic or manga?
Oh, that's a tough one because I've read some good stuff. I'm going to have to go with the classic. That's Battle for the Cowl.
Okay,
because this was the one that, you know, they had been teasing for a while. They did Final Crisis where Batman died, right? And they're like, well, how is this? Because, you know, when you kill Batman, the first thought is, well, what's going to happen now?
Yeah.
And so they did Battle for the Cowl. They put, you know, Dick versus Jason Todd and Tim Drake against one another to see who would be the Batman. And then all the villains came out to play, and it just created this great paradigm, and it was very stunning visually. Yeah. And for Dick Grayson to finally embrace his destiny of being Batman mm-hmm. for all of 2 years, and that was just a really cool moment. And I liked it visually. I'm stunned that they've never done an animated movie about this because it's right there.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy stuff. But you know, one day.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we say the same thing about some really great stuff, and then they give us what they give us, right?
Yeah, at times. But sometimes they get it right, like Under the Red Hood. Like that was just celebrated an anniversary, and that was really good.
Or Mask of the Phantasm.
Oh, gosh, Mask of the Phantasm. That or Batman Beyond Return of the Joker.
Yeah, that was good. So you bring that one up. Have you heard all the rumors that's been going around on around this?
I have not.
So the rumors is that they want to do a live action Batman Beyond movie.
Yeah, because Michael Keaton got cast in Flashpoint. Yeah, that I have heard. So that's been an eternal rumor that everyone supports, because it's like, why not? He's old enough now.
And that's the one thing that they haven't done yet, right? And it's because everybody's like, stop doing Batman. Do something good, better. I mean, it's good, but stop doing Batman. I've wanted Batman Beyond for quite some time too, but you need to do it right. I've heard that if they fans have predicted that if they're gonna do a Joker,
Return of the Joker,
they're gonna adapt that into film, and they're like, Johnny Depp as Joker. I said, no, come on, stop. Because we've killed Joker now, like, we've killed his character, like, we've done it way too much. Let's just now as, like, if we do the Return of the Joker in the Batman Beyond, I'm just like, I don't know if I want to watch it now, because the Joker's been done and it's been trampled over, man.
Well, it's not just that, but that movie, as great as it was, and it was great, even though the at-home version was apparently a lot more tame than the uncut version, which dear friend of mine, man I've talked to a lot, Dan Slott, he absolutely loves the uncut version.
Oh, really?
But anyway, that's another story. But that was a treat. You know, we didn't need that, but we got it, and it was cool. If they do Batman Beyond, they need to start with Blight, or something at least close to it, because that's the origin from the cartoon. And then they need to focus on that this is a different world. They occasionally tip their toes into the world in the main series, like with the Mr. Freeze arc, which was fine. But, you know, the Joker was, you know, the icing on the cake. What would happen if, you know, Joker did come back? You know, what happened to Joker in this world? That was a great question that I got answered. Yeah. We don't need it in movie form, because it shouldn't be like that in terms of, you know, focusing on this new Batman and the dynamic between him and Bruce, because that's the whole show is Terry McGinnis and Bruce Wayne.
Right.
So while I understand people wanting the Return of the Joker arc, that should not be their idea for however many movies they want to do with this. So
I agree.
It's not needed. And like you said, Joker's been done to death, especially in just the last few, you know, however many Batman movies, where we had Heath Ledger, who was awesome, Jared Leto, who was, and then Joaquin Phoenix, who got a freaking Oscar. So come on.
Leave it alone now. You guys finally got a Joker to get an Oscar. Leave it.
Well, hold on. If you recall, though, Heath also got one posthumously. But that one honestly never sat well with me, for being honest here. Did he deserve it? I felt like it was Hollywood overcompensating. Did he do great? Sure. But did he deserve Best Supporting Actor? I don't really know.
Yeah, I think
they were just, I honestly feel like they were just sad about Heath dying the way he did. And they're like, we should honor him more than just, you know, a photo reel. And it just so happened that everyone loved his Joker role. So let's give him a posthumous Oscar. And it was a touching moment, I won't lie. But Joaquin's Joker was not infinitely, but better than Heath's. And so he deserved that Oscar. And for me, Jack Nicholson. Fight me, I dare you.
I think there's some of our listeners that have definitely disagreed with you on all levels there.
I've lost a few Kickstarter backers, that's for sure. But,
No, please don't do that. Don't judge his view of his favorite Jokers and don't back out of his Kickstarter.
And if we're being honest here, the reason that Return of the Joker worked wasn't because they did, you know, a Batman Beyond Joker. It's because they did the original Joker. They brought in Mark Hamill to an excellent Joker one more time for all the children at home.
Awesome, dude. That's the best Mark Hamill Joker I've heard in a while. Awesome.
I'm surprised by how many people think I sound like him. It took me forever to get there, I swear. But you know what they say? Make him laugh.
Yeah, and you know what? I think he should be, if they're going to bring a Joker in, he should be the Joker.
He can't do it, though. I mean, no offense to Mark, his body type is not Joker. Not, especially not Batman Beyond Return of the Joker, because, like, that guy was skin.
Well, that's the premise. That should be the premise. He just got tired, and he just started watching Netflix and eating chips all day. right?
Ethics and chill. Am I say chill? I mean killing people. I know that's Mr. Freeze's act, but who cares?
There we go. We just found it for you guys. There you go. We got the premise.
There you go.
All right, Todd. I appreciate you coming on and hanging out with me here, man. It was heck of a lot of fun. I got to hear your freaking Joker impression. That's awesome. The best Joker, I think. I would say that's my favorite Joker.
Tops
all live action Jokers. He's my Joker because that's what I grew up on, man.
Yeah, same here.
All right, dude.
Campbell's eternal.
All right, dude. I don't know how we started talking about DC books and DC stuff in an indie show, but whatever.
Who cares?
That's whatever. It's my show. Anyway. All right, man. I appreciate you coming on and hanging out with us. Let everybody know where they can find you on social media, where they can get your book and Kickstarter and all that good stuff, and when it starts.
All right. Well, you can find me on Facebook. I'm at author Todd Black. You actually had my link. You messaged on me earlier, so you can post it on there if you want. On Twitter, I am at Guardians_comic. Same on Instagram. And I have an Amazon page, Todd Black Books, I believe it is. If not, you'll find me. And then the Kickstarter for Tokyo Blade Detectives No. 3 launches on August 1st. It'll be going to August 31st. So I'll give our dear host here the link so that he can spread it around, including on the info on the pages. So just go there. And I hope you'll help me make this successful.
Awesome, awesome. You guys should check it out because these tiers that he's mentioned today on the show are super cool. He's got the lowest goal in a long time that I've heard. You guys got to go back to this. I'm looking at the book right now. It is such a gorgeous cover. Really cool premise. Go back, Tokyo Blade Detectives by Todd Black. And a handful of awesome, awesome artists and creators on here. So check it out. Head on over to all his social media. Look at his old stuff. You can find his stuff on Comixology. So we'll see you guys next time right here on the House of Indie. Be safe.
Thanks again for listening to the House of Indie. My name is Joey Galvez, and I'll see you later.